Hello, this is Daryl War, as per usual.
Yeah, my name hasn't changed since I started this thing.
I don't know how the noise clean is going to go for this one, because I got the dishwasher in the background, and I'm like, yeah, I don't care. But yeah, everybody's getting really eager, and I'm calming away from the social networks. I'm doing the pen pal thing again. I'm calming down. So I'm at a different level than I think a lot of people, because as I've stepped back from the social networks and really been able to do that with the pen pal, so if any of you are listening, thank you so much, because you are helping me to heal. When I've taken the step back from what's been going on, it's made me go slower. But also, the work has made me go slower, because I'm very rusty at it. I need to go through 3 runs for episode 17, and so now I'm at the second run where I'm picking out lines and inflections, and that means that every single character is gone through meticulously to figure out what performance of a line or partial line makes the final cut, and in some cases, this includes merging a set of words together from 2 performances of it. So it's very meticulous, it's very boring, and if these characters weren't so effing awesome and wonderful, because they give to me, and like I say, I'm a conduit, that they are so entertaining, especially put together, it would be undoable. It would just be undoable. So that's what's going on, and I know that some people have been pressing the I want more button. Well, I'm sorry that you're not getting the showdown yet. I'm actually looking forward to Lily and Elizabeth getting on the boat. That's what I'm looking forward to. And also with Sam and Maggie, I'm looking forward to going through that scene and editing it, because I was telling quite a few friends that one of the things I loved, and you remember this from maybe episode 2, the intro of that, with the percolator. Well, now that I've saved Sam, percolator stays. And the 1967 percolator that we got from my in-laws, which was actually a wedding gift for them, I've used it for the pit, and I use it also for myself to make coffee. I love it because that stays. Sam stays, Evan's Cottage stays, that stays. So that should be in episode 17 as well, because that was something that I loved about Dark Shadows. I'm working really hard, but I'm also healing. I'm doing a lot of healing, and so that takes time. Melissa said, you know, there's no date on healing from any kind of bad treatment, any kind of abuse, any kind of starvation. There is no timetable for healing from any kind of trauma like this. But I think I'm doing quite well for that. So with this one, I rather want to address that I've moved back from the social network thanks to pen pals, which is what I always wanted with this. I'm calming down in a big way. I'm going back to how the internet was in 1999 to 2005, maybe, which was a very different world, and some of you might remember that world. It would actually be very good for me to know when a lot of you showed up to the internet, when it was given to you or handed to you, or you signed on, because I've heard that information from a lot of the closer friends I have now, and it's very important to know. It's about as important as your age. I used to not be an ageist, but when it comes to Dark Shadows, there's a serious generation gap problem. And a lot of us know that, because new fans are so much different than elder fans. A lot of us have had other fandoms that we've worked through, so a lot of what I'm doing, there are younger people who understand. And I've always reached out to younger people regardless, because when I was young, I saw the separatism with ooh la la, I'm older than you, therefore I'm better, therefore you stink. And I wasn't down with that. And I held on to that really strong. And that was what made me such a good high school teacher, because the students recognized that I was trying to be as equal to them as I possibly could in my teacher role. I thankfully never gave out a pink slip. I was really happy about that. I really wanted to steer clear of that. I know I've never fed a detention. I never did anything like that. I'm very grateful for that. And I got out sooner than I might have done because I didn't want to get into the cop headspace. I was very concerned about that. The students understood that. They let me know why you're leaving, because it's going to make you different, and we don't want you to change. That's why I will go to as many age ranges that I can. That's just a natural part of me. And for the rank pulling I had to deal with, where there have been fans of all ages giving people like me, and O'Sheen too, a hard time about being new fans to Dark Shadows, where you're either saying you watched it when it originally aired, or make some stink that you had it handed down from a relative. Like, this is some Hogwarts versus Muggle thing. It's very pathetic to see that. People getting high and mighty over a television show, and how to perceive it, or some kind of bizarre high school hierarchy garbage, which the internet was not based on for communication. It just makes you look really stupid and really pathetic, and not only that, but obviously unwelcoming. It doesn't spread around any of the Dark Shadows love, so to speak. This is not the military, and it's not a frat house. It's a fandom. And with me, it's several fandoms, which is why I see healthier things happening in the areas for shows outside of Dark Shadows. So all one needs to do is look at the population of the planet as a whole and realize not every last person in that population is going to take an interest, because that is obviously impossible. And if you come across as high and mighty, you'll mainly be inviting the nastier types into your circles. And sadly, it's all over watching a television show. If you have a hard time reading books, I completely understand that. I have a hard time with that, too. That's why I got into audio. But if some of you out there have a hard time with something so simplistic as watching and digesting television, I really don't know what to say. So I do what I do because I'm interested in the diversity and the garnering of the positive in that diversity. All right, so let's get down to some studying, because a lot of you are eager for this episode and it's just taking me a long time. I'm healing. I'm editing. Editing is boring. I'm also watching Dark Shadows. I'm going to watch the other shows. I really want to do a podcast about the other shows because this has just been way too Dark Shadow-centric. And that bothers me, because the other shows are incredibly important, especially Clue, because a lot of the Pit format is very Clue-oriented in one line feeds the other line and back and forth in that pattern. And I go to media stores, because we still have them where I live, and I will buy up a lot of cheap copies of Clue on DVD, and I send them to people if they're unfamiliar with Wadsworth. That's important, and I want to incorporate more Clue, and I love it that when I got to Willie and Wadsworth already knowing each other, I could incorporate more Clue, because Willie's always hungry for more stories about what happened at Hill House when he was outside. So I love that, too. Anyway, what I'm doing right now, I've gotten back to my crafts and the calmness of just watching Dark Shadows, which is a very boring show for the most part. And that's why it is so soothing. And there's been people that I've seen where they say, I watch it to get to sleep at night. So it's not as, as it seems on social media. That's just a lot of bandwagon nonsense, a lot of gossip, a lot of weirdness. But there is a very big generation gap, because a lot of us younger fans, we know how fandom activity works. And a lot of the elder fans are just out of touch with how that works. And that's why I mention Star Trek so much, because if you look at how the Star Trek fandom has helped itself in so many ways and has tried to maintain accuracy in so many ways to its characters most of the time, then with Dark Shadows having been about the same time period, you see the separation where Star Trek thrived and Dark Shadows plummeted. And it took a lot of decades for that to happen. Anyway, I don't have a script for this. I'm just talking because it's been preying on my mind tonight. I want to go over what we've already been through. And one of the things that I really want a lot of you to recognize, that if you are hungry for the next Pit episode, I am too, but it takes a lot of work and effort and time and performances and editing and all of that stuff, and my healing for what's happened, if you've listened to the series for years. So if you're hungry for more, you already know the other stuff is good. Go back to those episodes and answer the discussion questions. That's why I made those. I had to learn how to make them from having taught high school. So if you can't find that website with the Q&A, you can see it at the top of the Podomatic site. The URL is there. Or if you're on the other weblog, there is a menu on the left-hand side. In the top list is a link that says Radio Drama Episode Links and Discussion Questions. The method for gravitating that website, when you hit the link over there, and I wish I could do this differently, but what's there is the big collage with a ton of the characters, and every episode listed below that. So you'd go to the title of whatever episode you want, and it will have a play button for the episode if you just want to rest your machine to that page and play it there. Or there are links in between the episode summary and the discussion questions. Now, if you want to simply talk about what you enjoyed per scene, that can work because the summaries go through that minus episode 1 through 3, as those were a lot of catch-up and weave in particulars. Beyond that, I'm also doing the pen pal thing. So if you want to do the pen pal thing and get the CDs, which are upgraded, I'm not doing it for the podcast right now because it's not worth it. It's worth it for the pen pals, but it's not worth it for the online. You just get in touch, email that way, and we'll start from there. I will need a postal address. That's how we do these things. And I try to make it as fun as I can. I know that the happy buttons have depleted the fun discussion, because if you've got a thumbs up or a sticker, that will give you an easy out from discussing what you liked and appreciated. It wasn't that long ago. It was very natural for a lot of us to do that. But if you have a happy button, like a thumbs up or a 1+ or smiley face, whatever that, you know, a heart, it's really obnoxious because I happen to think Valentine's Day is awesome now because I got a sweetheart that works for me. So that kind of bastardizes that. What those happy buttons tend to do is encourage the obsessive compulsive tendency that a lot of us have. And that depletes the higher functions of correspondence and discussion. So that is the tricky part of some of the happy buttons, is that they increase the lower functions and deplete the higher functions. So people who are naturally prone to growth by personal challenge are going to notice that and look for other ways to get their human needs met with real socializing rather than video game socializing. And the people less prone to that are just going to keep using the happy buttons until it gets old. That's about it. But I say go to the old episodes because they're so chunky. If you're bored and you're hungry for another episode of The Pit, go to the old episodes and start answering the discussion questions. That'll keep you busy. That'll keep you busy and aware of what's happened in previous episodes. That's number one. Number two, if you email, private message, or put a review at fanfiction.net, because that's where I'm putting them now. I'm not doing it so much at Podomatic. I've been pulling those off and putting them at fanfiction.net because that's a more reliable source for me to keep an organized record. But if you go through the discussion questions, that keeps you mentally active in every variable that's going on in the pit for you. And then you don't have to suffer so much for this next episode that's taken me forever. And on top of that, the other thing that reviewing, commenting, answering discussion questions for old episodes of the pit, the other thing that that does for you and for me is to keep track of what's going on so we can keep the continuity together. In that way, this May update, which I'm sorry I have to make because it's taking so long to get the show on the road, which is what I really want. It's not leaving me alone. I don't want to just talk to thin air here. I want to get it going and live. We're going to go over the episodes of The Pit, and I'm going to just go through it so you get an idea of what I'm looking for, and also have something to listen to, because you guys are all, when's the next one? I'm like, okay, you know, I don't know what to do. Let's just do this. And let the dishwasher go in the background. Hopefully the noise clean will get rid of that. And don't tell me you don't have time for it, because you've had time for this series. You had plenty of time, and I've seen a lot of you have plenty of time to waste on social media. So I don't have time. I don't buy it.
Just like I don't buy the TV Guide wrap-up of Dark Shadows Sam Hall wrote, and I don't buy This Is What Really Happened at the end of the video of Clue. I don't buy either of those. And y'all know that. So don't tell me. I don't have time. You got plenty of time. I've been watching you for years. You got plenty of time.
I know a lot of you don't know how to orbit in this internet world you've somewhat been thrown into. And unfortunately, a repercussion of that is sharing links and check out this movie and check out this video and check out this and check out that. All that does is slow the pit down if it's not integral to the upcoming work. That's all that does. So don't feel bad. I just want to let you know. Because I did the same thing. I'd get all these like clicks on Facebook or whatever, and I didn't know what to do with them, so I'd throw down YouTube videos because I'm like, well, I'm thinking about this now, and I got a notification, I'll throw it down. And I would do that all the time because I didn't know what to do with the like clicks. I had no idea. I mean, it doesn't tell you anything. In fact, I was on the phone with O'Shane, and she's been out of Dark Shadows a bit because she's working on Richard III. And to deal with that, she cares about the actual Richard III, the actual king, not who Shakespeare wrote about, which has been an enormous success from so many centuries, but the real person, Richard III. So she's been out of the loop for a while, but she goes back.
I told her, I was very happy to see your words of, how much of the same old can people take?
And she said, yeah, I guess I was so active in putting my own stuff up on all these different Facebook groups that it wasn't all that important that other people's stuff wasn't all that fulfilling, as I was so invested in putting my own things up there. But now that I've not been so active with it via all these other things going on, so I just sort of delve back into it every now and then, and it's like, oh my God, it's the same crap. Look at that. 10 pictures of Barnabas and 10 pictures of Quentin. There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing. And, you know, nobody's even talking about it. Nobody's even talking about Barnabas or Quentin or anything. They're just, like you say, the like clicks and whatever. And if there is a comment, it's, ooh, nice pic. And however many exclamation marks or something, there's just nothing going on with most of that stuff. Really odd. I really don't see how anybody finds it fulfilling. So, and I told her, yeah, it's just mindless nostalgia. Totally mindless. It just, you know, you think my talks are boring. I think I understand why so many of y'all enjoy what I'm saying, because at least it's a little bit different than what you gotta contend with on the social media. Or Lord have mercy, Googling Dark Shadows, good God. I've told people who are curious about what I'm doing, please don't Google Dark Shadows. Please don't Google it. Just go to Wikipedia. It's gonna keep you sane. And also, Wikipedia will help you with all the other shows. What on earth do you think I was using when I built this series? I was using Wikipedia, YouTube videos, and the actual shows, whatever I could get, the source material. Sometimes I used online wikias, but most of the time it was wikipedia.org and the actual shows, the source material, and solitude, or watching shows with my husband, and writing notes, and doing crafts. Which I'm coming back to. It's another reason that I've calmed down quite a bit. And if you email me, I will show you what I'm working on, craft-wise. I'm so happy to be back to that. Just like I'm so happy to be back to the paper letters. It's very fulfilling. Not like going on social media groups. I'm happy that some of them are quite successful. However, it's very difficult to glory in that success while trying to get this done. So let's get to the studying. I want to do the studying for the pit. Just so that you have something to go with, because I know you want more, and it's hard to get 17 done. And also, if you want more information about 17, it's not going to be in the March update, it's going to be in the January update. I talked about 17 a lot there. If you're hungry for 17, listen to January. I know my voice is not at its best, but that's where I talk about episode 17 the most right now.
Everything is there, and you could use these questions, a few of my pen pals do, for the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. And from the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows.wordpress.com, not the one that's just Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. There's a difference between the two WordPress weblogs. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows.com is the one that's just centered on the radio drama as much as I could, with the questions that I built, because when I was emailing a few people, I realized they needed questions and they liked the questions. And my mom also likes the questions because it keeps them formatted into scene-by-scene play. And for some people, they don't need the questions, just the summary of play-by-play, scene-per-scene. They don't need the questions. They just need that play-by-play per scene. This is this scene, this is that scene, and then to talk about it that way. In fact, when I send the paper Q&A, sometimes they start answering what happened in the little nooks that I've built in the printouts of that weblog when I talk about the scene. Sometimes they will just start talking about the scenes before they get to the numbered questions, which I love because that adds more. That's one of those more the merrier instances. So this is the Study Buddy podcast. Let's go to episode 1. And that was very much, let's jump in and gate crash. Let's just jump in. I didn't incorporate Willie because I chose a time point before Sam had died, but after Willie left, because I wasn't sure what to do with Willie. I was concerned about him, but after seeing how he responded to Adam, I'm like, we've got to get him somewhere safe until a good moment in time comes to bring him back, which, as a lot of you know, was very difficult for me. It was extremely strenuous dealing with Willie. Now that he's calmed down more, it's easier. And I try to get his voice and his inflections and his emotions and his feelings as best I can. But I pulled Willie out because I wanted to keep him safe from a lot of the problems that were happening and tried to give him a safe harbor before he came back. So that's why he doesn't know Cassandra in the pit. And he had to get Wadsworth's take on Angelique. Which, of course, if you've heard episode 16, he ain't having none of that. He's ready to just kick her rear end. He was like, you know, for a deserving vampire, I already have. And he realizes that Barnabas is worth it, and vampire Angelique is not. So we have Wadsworth entering the old house from an advertisement that Barnabas finally sent out because, well, Willie's gone, I need more help. And Dr. Hoffman just isn't going to cut it. I mean, she's not going to do what Willie did. So I need more help. It was a little twist. And here comes Wadsworth, that some of us younger fans know and adore. And some of the elder fans, too. Just took a while to have him come into existence from 1954 and extend. Oh, yeah, I think I need to deal with this. Then, as a lot of you know, Roger is so Roger in the pit. I mean, when you first hear him, I know. When aren't we having a problem? I mean, what else do you want? Well, that's Roger. Pure and simple. He's just making light of everything. The third scene was added from the original. When I got to quite a few episodes in, I realized there's a lot of stuff in my head that wasn't put down on paper, so to speak. Because Wadsworth was already helping Barnabas to reach Maggie as the reincarnation of Josette. It was very obvious to him, like it was very obvious to me. And if you watch a lot of the explanation that Wadsworth gives in Clue, it's very much how I feel, where people are asking questions. And Wadsworth keeps saying, of course it's obvious. So in a lot of ways, that's why I've incorporated Wadsworth into my public online activity. I feel like he is looking at all this the same way I look at it. It's obvious. The fourth scene, we've got the parapsychologist from Poltergeist. I just wanted to see them make a comeback. They're just dealing with what's going on. And then, of course, we all know that was Slimer, who, from my teen years, was my babe. And then we've got the coffee shop scene. Because when I originally watched Dark Shadows, and this is a staple of a lot of fans, that coffee shop scene with Maggie and Barnabas, for a lot of us, it was a quiet moment. Catherine Lee Scott has talked about how it's her favorite scene. With all the turmoil going on, it was something that I watched repeatedly when I was first getting discs of the series to watch, because I'm like, wow, this is a quiet moment. It's away from the Jason McGuire stuff.
it's just something that I wish there was more of it. So that's why there's more coffee shop scenes with Barnabas and Maggie and Fit, because I was extending that.
It was the safe place. I'd love to do more of that, but I don't know if it'll be necessary. And then for episode one, there's Carolyn and Burke inviting the people from Poltergeist, Marty, Ryan, and Dr. Lesh, which I didn't do too much work on their voices. I was just like, kind of like an audiobook, just get it through. After the coffee shop scene, though, there's the ride home, and I did a lot of study for that, you know, the Ecto-1 and what the car was and the Ghostbusters and all that, you know. I was just like, let's just do this. At the same time, when I rewrote the script, there was a lot of stuff Wadsworth said that was a little bit inspired by the 2012 film and also just by what I was getting from the original with Barnabas and Maggie and Josette, and Wadsworth pointing out, haven't you ever liked her for herself? And then, of course, the ending, which gives us a lot of goodies. Now, episode 2, I have noticed with a lot of pen pals, that really helps them. The intro and what the hosts say. It really picks up, this is what happened in the original series, with what I'm saying in the intro for episode 2, Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups, and also what the hosts are catching up the audience with. This is what happened in the original. And I love Tingler's review over the catch-up in episode 2. He said, and now the hosts did indeed do a marvelous job glazing over the slow, ever so slow show to bring us up to date. Plus, they gave good humor while doing it. That just cracks me up. The slow, ever so slow original show, because it is. Most of the time, it's so slow. Wadsworth is there, but he's just dealing with it. A lot of the same stuff is happening, so you've got to weave in big time with episode 2 and also with episode 3. So with episode 2, there's just a lot of fun stuff, and there's also a geography lesson between Sam and Wadsworth and Maggie at the end. And I still am blown away. I mean, did nobody laugh at Miss Cleo? Good God almighty. That was just, I mean, I didn't know how else to incorporate the Cassandra component. And it's funny, too, because where Miss Cleo's character resides is very much an area that it was like Martinique. So why wouldn't Miss Cleo want to help Cassandra slash Angelique in some way? That was fun. And I definitely, with Miss Cleo, I was back in the day on YouTube, you know, listening to a lot of the prank calls where people would take her voice from the infomercials and just feed it to people they were prank calling. And I think there's a lot of stuff on YouTube where people were pulling that stuff, and there were a few people who were totally amused and just went with it. But yeah, that was the cream. And I looked on my husband's Spotify account for coffee songs, and I finally just went, Annette Henshaw, Cream in My Coffee, let's just go with that. Also, speeding up the Victoria Winter stuff, that she comes from 1795. I didn't want to go through 1795. I'm like, that is set because it was in the past. We're working at an interruption time point where that has already happened. So there we are. And then trying to bleed in various things that are going on, like Peter saying, yeah, somebody call me. You know, and for some of you that don't like Roger Davis, I just want to say, I love performing his voice. I mean, it's so squawky and it's fun, and, you know, he made a lot of trouble on the set. I agree with some of the complaints, both with fans and with cast members. I agree. You know, I saw the interview, I thought, oh, this guy's going to be fun, and then I thought, oh, this is very much like what B. Arthur talked about with Leslie Nielsen in the last episodes of The Golden Girls. Leslie Nielsen, as wonderful a man as he is known to be, he was making a lot of trouble because he was a practical joker, just like Roger Davis. So I can see where that would be a problem on set, because people want to get the work done. And yeah, it's really cute to have this kind of thing once in a while, but when it's constant, then that's makes it difficult. That makes the work very difficult. So I like Peter Bradford. That's why I don't call him Jeff Clark. With Victoria and Peter, it's Victoria and Peter. It's not Victoria and Jeff. And Gomez is going to, in my plans, work out how Peter will be Peter. Indefinitely. Because you know the Adams. They get their way. But with Roger Davis, I'm fine. You just understand who the actor is and who his characters are. With Peter Bradford, to me,
it made a lot of sense that Victoria would gravitate towards Peter. He put himself on the line for her in 1795 and later, and so yeah, it made a lot of sense. So I've just cut off that possession point with Jeff Clark. So with episode 2, there's a lot of fun and a lot of catch-up time, and another extra scene was Carolyn and Dr. Hoffman just picking up. It all blends together so well. So Victoria comes back from 1795. There's the time machine stuff, which I did post a lot about. When Rod Taylor passed away, it was good that I got that out, because at least I had gotten that second episode out before Rod Taylor had passed away. The scene with Victoria, and I thought that was funny as heck, talking about there was a man in a machine with a jewel lever and a great spinning disc at the back. And it's crazy because Clover and I grew up with major reruns of that. I would go see it at a repertoire theater because my parents would take me. It was just something to do. So I think her and I in our 40s have been more inundated with the Time Machine 1960 than a lot of the people who might have seen it in the theater or the repeats on TV. It was just so prevalent. And I got really into it. Clover got sick of it. But I went through a lot of hardship to get the CD soundtrack to that movie because I loved it so much, and it was a matter of special order. It was not the universe we have now where you just go to Amazon or whatever, or some online retailer. I had to really save and scrimp and special order and layaway and all of that to get that CD. So with episode 2, you better be thankful, because I really went through a lot to get the music for that when I was in my teens. And it was overplayed when Clover and I were growing up. So it's a little bit different than some of you in your 50s and 60s now. And I don't know what for some of the people who are younger than us. Then we've got episode 3, The Strega of Brooklyn, as some of you are aware. Strega means witch in Italian. And that was how I felt Sophia Petrillo was. And that, again, was catch-up time and a weave-in. Adam's dealt with out of Willie's sight. We don't have to deal with that. It's like one reviewer told me, oh, this is great. It's just two ladies talking. They're just shooting the breeze and going through everything. It's just nice and simple that way. Just catching the audience up with what we've eliminated and what we've gone through and what happened. And also very inspired by DS Annotations. There should just be one episode where we follow Mrs. Johnson around the house. She cleans and bitches about the Collins family. And that was very inspired by DS Annotations. Like, well, here it is. I've made it. Episode 3. This is the one with a lot of Mrs. Johnson. And then there's Freddy Krueger and all that. Adam is slick as ever, and he goes through it. So there we are. And episode 4, after I'd gone through all of the Ghost of Mrs. Muir I could find online, and there's a lot more now, that fandom is thriving like nobody's business. I'm so happy about that. We get Carolyn and Tony going out to Schooner Bay. We get them meeting Mrs. Muir. And that's why I make that difference in the script. It's Carolyn meeting Carolyn's daughter. It's Mrs. Muir meeting Carolyn Muir. You get that difference. And I address that in episode 4, where Carolyn and Carolyn meet, and Carolyn's daughter notices they've got the same first name. And Mrs. Muir says, well, just call me Mrs. Muir, because that's what everybody else calls me. Because I noticed that in The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, not a lot of people called her by her first name. So I figured everything was okay. And I apologize for confusing any Ghost of Mrs. Muir fans with that, because that was what I saw on The Ghost of Mrs. Muir show. She wasn't often called Carolyn. She was often called, like in the movie, Mrs. Muir. So I went with that. And also with the script, I've started to leave out the period to the Mrs. because what I notice is that fanfiction.net is thinking it's something to do with an Earl, and they've got to get rid of that, so it just automatically deletes. So there was a time where Mrs. Muir's name on the script of The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows was just deleted, and it was just nothing but lines, and I had to go in and fix that. So I think in the future I'm going to get rid of the period, because that problem where the site thinks that it is an Earl trying to get in, and that's not what I mean. So I'm probably going to get rid of that in the future.
So I definitely need to have the ghost of Mrs. Muir through this whole thing, as well as the Addams Family, Lily Munster, blah, blah, blah.
So with the fourth one, yes, and then we have the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which probably scared a lot of Ghost of Mrs. Muir fans for that indoctrination into the pit, and then all of a sudden you're seeing this, and oh no. I just thought maybe, you know, the Passamaquoddy thing would have gotten you okay with that, but whatever. And then with episode 5, Saving Pop, which was one of the big reasons that I created the series to begin with, we've got some Maggie and Sam stuff, which was really wonderful, and Tony and Carolyn. I was worried about Tony and Carolyn the most because I just saw them hurting so bad for each other. And then as I've analyzed the series in the soap opera format, and in a lot of ways, Carolyn Stoddard gets passed around like R2-D2 in Star Wars. Carolyn was just swung around with so many love interests just to keep the story going. Tony and Carolyn actually did work as a romantic couple very well, but not for a soap opera, which is what makes The Pit so great for them. As a humor mystery serial, Tony and Carolyn totally work. I love that. Then there is the voices that I did not do, which was from The Prisoner, Dance of the Dead. And that was the one where Barnabas has a dream that he is the prisoner, Patrick McGowan. And that was all original prisoner clip. When I did the demo, I just read the lines, but I had to use it because Josette's music box was in there, at least the original version, before they changed it for copyright issues. But that was a lot of fun, especially for Melissa, because she's a big prisoner fan. Because she's talking about, you know, loving Barnabas and also loving the prisoner and Patrick McGowan. I'm like, well, then you're going to love episode 5. Because Barnabas is dreaming he is the prisoner. So I could not leave that out because I had seen the history. Things were a little less crazy online and people were talking about the show rather than complaining about who loved who and who should love who and all that garbage. So scary. Well, you know, I understand book reading problems, but when you can't watch TV, there is something really wrong. Really wrong. And then we get the lovely Captain Sensible song at the end where Victoria and Peter are faced with Norman Bates. And then in episode 6, Coffee, Tea, and Cribbage. Now, I know now why a lot of y'all couldn't even deal with that, because whatever is going on at the end there with Barnabas and Julia, it is so chunky. That's why I'm thinking, with how many listeners and readers I've got for The Pit, everybody could throw something in with all that discussion at the end there with Barnabas and Julia and the game and talking about how the dream curse fizzled. I mean, you got so much to go on with that. I mean, and because it was crazy. I just kept going along. It's like, well, how did the dream curse fizzle? And it was actually Clover that made the suggestion of Milton the Monster so many years ago. I said, am I missing any 1960s spooky stuff? And she said, well, check out Milton the Monster. And then I did a little bit. And that's been wonderful because Milton the Monster, I haven't watched much of it, but I just grabbed what I could and incorporated that. And what's great is there is definitely a pen pal who is so happy to be reminded of Milton the Monster. She thought, oh, I don't know Milton the Monster. Yes, I do. I know Milton the Monster. And like, so there's that. And there's also, I just was running with it with Coffee, Tea, and Cribbage, where Barnabas says, in my dream, I was playing a game of snooker with all 8 balls. And then the 8 balls started answering yes or no questions. So that means that it was snooker with all 8 balls. And then all the 8 balls started becoming magic 8 balls. So I could see where it would be difficult to respond to that episode because there was just so much going on, especially with the repercussions to the dream curse fizzling. It's just a lot. And then, of course, cribbage itself. I don't know if a lot of listeners know how to play cribbage. And the fun of that, I got a review recently where somebody's, I was breaking a sweat with finding out how the cribbage wager was going to go. That's wonderful. Because, yeah, that was my issue with Julia Barnabas. It was not lack of romantic reciprocation. It was, he asked you, would you like to play cribbage? He did it jestingly, but Dr. Hoffman, you should have said yes, and for the bit, she does. So there you go. I fixed that up, too. And
Sam trying to explain to Captain Greg. Oh, yeah, Angelique. This is going to take a long time to explain. And Oshin agreed in her review, where it's like, yeah, this is going to take so much more time than possible. And Oshin, as a museum professional with a PhD in history, she got of anyone, you know, nobody else got this. Oh, you know, Captain Greg is like, witches, they're harmless enough. And Sam says, not one with a chip on her shoulder the size of Seward's Folly. And Seward's Folly is the purchase of Alaska. Alaska is the biggest state in the Union. So yes, Angelique's got a chip on her shoulder the size of Alaska. There you go. That's what that is. So it incorporates all that stuff. And Oshin got that. I really appreciated that she got that. The size of Seward's Folly. And then when Victoria and Peter are fleeing the Bates Motel, there is the onset of the Addams Family. So for episode 7, moving along, because I can't mention everything, that was the cream. That was when this project really took off, which is great because it's called the Blair Warlock Projected. And I really hadn't seen much of the Blair Witch Project. I just thought, well, Nicholas Blair is a warlock, and we're going to project him, so I'm going to name the episode that. There's the Italian eatery from the Pit of Ultimate Darkness gets in the Kids in the Hall, and I actually got some coins from all over the world. I'd been wanting them for years, and I thought this is the perfect reason for sound effects for the half dollars that Milligan is going to tip Maggie with. And another thing that's funny, you know, Maggie's always like doing these tripped out things in the pit. For me, I started the pit farcically, and one of the big reasons that I did that was because I felt that Maggie as a reincarnation of Josette was so obvious, it was funny. So that's why a lot of that stuff just goes down humorously. Because I'm just like, this is so obvious, it's hilarious. It's so obvious. And then of course now you got everybody go, Maggie's not a reincarnation of Josette. I'm like, Maggie wasn't Josette. You've basically made my case. Because you have the knee-jerk reaction. I'm like, yeah, well, bully for you, because people who I can perceive intelligence from, they got no problem with that. So that was just a big insecurity issue with a lot of people jumping the gun on that. Big deal. So that goes through, and there's David's stuff. You know, he's got to work stuff out, because he is like, oh yeah, let's get Sarah back. Which, like I said, you know, I wasn't sure I wanted to bring her back, but then I saw what a big difference it would make. I just went along with it. And then Peter and Victoria at the Addams Family. I did the best that I could with that. And it was fun to make the actual podcast version, the audio version. I'm horrible, Gomez. I'm going to try and get better. But for the most part, I'm so happy with that. And it was good because I had meant for Victoria and Peter to run away. And they didn't because I studied the Addams Family thoroughly. And it's one of the best things that happened. I was just going for accuracy with all the fandoms, all the shows. And as it turns out, the Addams Family fandom have been so supportive when I finally reached them with what I was doing. So it was very important. And it wasn't my decision so much as trying to relay accuracy to each show and to all the characters. As it turns out, it fed itself. The Addams Family fans were there. I tried to adhere as accurately as I could, and they were with me 100%. It was great. And it is great, and I hope it continues to be great, because I want to keep them in as long as I can. I'm starting to understand how to write for them a little bit more. So it's just as well that this took as long as it has. Then Elizabeth blushingly interrupts Tony and Carolyn in the drawing room, having a bit of a smooch. More than that, if you heard that. And that was great, because that just throws Nicholas Blair out the door, and then at the Blue Whale, Bob and Maggie are talking, and then a lovely dance scene that was so much effort. And when I got to that in what I was doing, that was when I was really pulled into the Barnabas and Maggie couple. I was really just sucked in, because I was performing both roles. And rather than it just being a write-up, it became extremely real to me, because I was becoming both of them, interacting with each other. Barnabas wasn't somebody that I was particularly concerned with. It was very obvious to me.
But becoming him is a very big difference than wanting to possess the guy for yourself. When you perform him, you have to get him right. And to get him right means that he's got the sensuous appeal, he's got the classic movie actor vibe, he's got so many things that are very important and touches the human soul so deeply. When a lot of the time I was just making fun of everything. And then I perform it and it becomes different. So that scene of the blue whale, the non-date, I just adore. It really opened me up. It was really good. And then Dr. Hoffman and Professor Stokes going to visit Willie Loomis at Wycliffe. That was great too, because that was when I started to see Dr. Hoffman a little bit like Colonel Pickering in My Fair Lady. And you'll notice in a later episode, she actually, when she sees Sarah again, she says, "I'm dashed," which is something Colonel Pickering in My Fair Lady says quite a bit. Because in episode 7, Professor Stokes was teasing her, "If you go on with this line of suggesting where we should deal with Willie Loomis's speech patterns rather than his writing, I'm going to start calling you Colonel Pickering." I think that's about all I'm going to do. Because this is just taking too long. Like I said, you know, I was doing this just to try to give you guys something else to do, and I know you want more of me, but I want to get the show on the road, and if you are hungry for more of the pit, go back to old episodes and discuss them with me. Email, weblog, fanfiction.net, whatever, I don't care. If you're hungry, there are 16 episodes currently that have been worked with so much love and attention, and you got those. And I say, get out of the urgency mode, enjoy those, and learn how to talk again. And learn how to talk about what you enjoy again. Because whatever has happened in this science fiction nightmare made real at the dawn of the 21st century, we gotta get out of it. And the only thing I know what to do about that is, if you love the pit, learn how to talk again. Learn how to talk about it again. Go back to what you used to be able to naturally do. It's all I know how to offer you right now. Because episode 17 is taking a long time. And the marriage novel is taking a long time. If all you care about is a marriage novel, go back to chapter 5 and tell me what you got out of it. It's a matter of reciprocation and discussion. It's a matter of having our own little niche. Who cares about the rest of the world? Let it all go by. Care about what you love. Care about the small group that you love it with. Don't worry about popularity. People have told me, you don't want to alienate people. Don't want to alienate people? What do you think a lot of you all have been doing to me? You've been alienating me. You picked me out to listen to and enjoy, and then rather than be human about it, you went around robotically like-clicking tons of posts. A lot of you have been extremely disingenuous with me. You approach me and avoid what I'm doing, just making claims that you're reaching out to me solely because I'm a fan of one of the programs or another, when we both know, for darn sure, I am more than that. What do you think that is going to do to someone? What do you think that's going to do to someone putting themselves out there for discussion on the work and getting detailed hate or simplified, covert adoration? You do that to someone and you're going to get the monster I became. I had a drinking problem a long time ago, and I got out of it because I was getting away from bad people, many of whom are family members. And then I simmered down and made them absent from my life. Moved to a new location, got married to my sweetheart of 24 years, and things got better. Then I started to create this. The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. I saw the intense amount of numbers in the stats over the years. Watched people I'd known for decades degrade in their social media addictions. And the drinking problem came back. So, sadly enough, some of you didn't necessarily cause my problem to resurface, but your behavior sure helped it to grow again. And why? It's a community you are a part of by being active online. The internet is a community, and we're in it. You can feign ignorance of that for only so long. Flipping on your television set tends to still be a one-way street. Engaging with the internet is not. It's a community, and you are a part of that community. So, even lurkers make waves. I have to say, I'm rather grateful to find out Mitchell Ryan and I have something in common in being public about this kind of problem. Or even Bela Lugosi with his heroin addiction and being so open and so grateful to get the help on that level so very long ago. It's like Jonah and I have discussed being alcoholics. Us knowing and accepting that about ourselves meant we were catching on to the social media being an addiction problem that barely anyone wanted to face. And do you know what's happening right now? People are actually paying for the therapy they need to detoxify from their social media addiction. The article I read on BBC.com expressed it's worse than alcohol or drug abuse because it's much more engaging and there's no stigma behind it. And of course there's no stigma, no social stigma, because you're encouraged by a lot of other people to use it. So why would there be any social stigma? So there you have it. Looking down your nose at me for that, you have something much worse to work out. I already know the way out. It's pen pals, phoning friends, human connection, things a lot of you would rather not do anymore for whatever reason, and mainly because you're desperately looking for a large group of some kind to be your leader in what you decide, when deep down you know that the true leader really ought to be yourself. It's not a matter of popularity. It never has been. It's about shared interests, and it's about kindred spirits. So, get in touch. I will be editing this podcast. I will be editing episode 17, and I'm also going to be editing episode 9 for the CD version for pen pals who have gotten that far. That's my business. Scroll and like, click your life away if that's what you want to do. But I got something good. And I know it's good.